Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I did a lot of coverage of Baltimore Comic Con on Geek Brunch. We did pretty much a day-by-day type situation, what some of the purchases were. So I'm not going to go over those purchases specifically, so listen to Geek Brunch. It should be releasing before this episode. However, there were some that I didn't cover on Geek Brunch. Baltimore Comic Con came and went. We were there from a Wednesday to a Monday, and it was a lot of fun. Baltimore had changed a lot. The pier was not as vibrant as in the past. It looked like the COVID had took its toll on a lot of the restaurants that used to be there and the area. We used to always do a speedboat, the Sea Dog. It was gone. A lot of Ripley's Believe It or Not was gone. A lot of the restaurants were gone. But other than that, the con itself was very lively. There were a lot of creators. If you're there for creators, it's a good place to go. It's a very good place to go for back issues. Lots of vendors, lots of places to choose from. There were even a lot of adult comics, which you don't normally see. And I actually saw like some Flintstones and Scooby-Doo comics on the wall books as wall books, like the Marvel ones. And they were going for like 50, you know, the number ones are going for like 50 or higher. Which I've kind of seen the trend on some funny books. You know, I recently got into a buying frenzy of first appearances of Looney Tunes and Scooby-Doo and all this. I still need the Jetsons, but goddamn, that book is expensive. Drinking some iced tea on a Friday and getting ready for the weekend. Looking forward to it immensely. But not looking forward to Monday, because next week is going to be one of those work nightmare weeks. And I have to cram in 40 hours at least in 4 days because of I need to take off on Friday to take care of some house things. So that should be fun. But we got there on Wednesday night, met up with some friends, Alan specifically. I had some great food out there. Not all of my the people I was with could say the same, but whatever I ordered was just on fire, whether it be like a fish sandwich or a chicken honey heat burnt, you know, like. It was almost like a Big Mac of chicken, but it was amazing. Had really good burger out there. There were some of the usual hot spots that we went to. Good pizza. Saw one of the big things is, even though it was short on Saturday, is DC Noise was reunited. Haven't seen these guys in a while, especially Keith. So that was amazing, and a lot of laughs were had. Obviously, Geek Brunch was there. Me and Bill, this is Bill's first Baltimore Comic Con. He usually goes to Heroes, and we were talking on Geek Brunch as trying to make a yearly trip either to Baltimore or Heroes, you know, depending on how our summers align. So, They're both comparable cons for me. It's, you know, the panels are very interesting at both cons. They have a lot of panels. The hardest part is finding which ones you're going to go to, and you can't always go to the ones you want because they're aligned with another one you want to see, or you're meeting up with friends at a certain time and you miss some of the panels. But panels are sometimes you'll get some really classy stories of things from creators just on comic book history and things, unusual things that you never knew before. It was a good. I went to some good panels. The ones I thought were going to be spectacular were not as spectacular, and the ones that I was ho hum about seeing turned out to be the better ones. So you never know what you're going to get when you go to a panel, but some of the ones I went to were just gems. I had a blast learning these stories. One of them how was like strange stories from creators, and there was some very interesting and heartfelt stories and crazy stories that I wouldn't have known. It was good stuff. So went to about five panels. I went to a Howard Chaykin panel, a Batman 80-year panel, which had Tom King and Klaus Janson and Dan Jurgens, and there was an editor, moderator. That was fun. And that was in the biggest auditorium there. The Howard Chaykin was very, like I expected, he ran his own panel. He's kind of abrasive. And that it kind of makes for a funny panel. It's very interesting because he talks about like doing what he wanted his entire career. And it wasn't superheroes and stuff. He pretty much, the stuff he loves is the stuff that he, you know, created. Didn't mention Star Wars one bit. The strange, unusual stories. Some of the great stories were from Love and Capes creator Tom Zeller. Like he had the best stories that I ever heard. One of them involved, I can't think of his name, but he wrote some star. Harlan Ellison involved him like early in his career. He had met him and showed Ellison his work. And he was pretty pumped about it, that he worked hard with IDW to get his material published over there. I thought that was amazing because he went out of his way to help this young creator get work. Another one that was interesting is he's popular now for doing My Little Pony from IDW. And he had a kid that was at his booth and just was talking up a storm. And he's like, you know, how do I stop this kid from talking so much? And he just let it play out. And then when the child finished talking, the mother went by and said that he was on the spectrum and he was nonverbal. Can you imagine having a kid that didn't speak a word and read My Little Pony and then all of a sudden won't shut up? Talking about it to some stranger, you know, the creator that did it. That's fucking amazing. And the other story that Tom Zeller had that I would have been interested in is he was going to do a Transformers, you know, Transformers when they were at IDW. He was going to do a Transformers Top Gun crossover. And they started it, and it was an odd book because they were like, you can do anything you want, but you can't use Tom Cruise's likeness. Amazing. Can you believe that? Because probably they didn't want Tom Cruise to poo-poo and say, you can't do this. So they were able to use like Maverick, his ship, and stuff like that, but couldn't use Tom Cruise. There were stories from Richard Case of Doom Patrol fame about Grant Morrison and like how he'd get these strange scripts, and Grant would say, yeah, I was on some drugs when I did that. There was some great stories on another panel from Emma Kubert about her grandfather and her father and her uncle and growing up in the Kubert school. And it was just some good. The Trekker artist and writer was there. And he had gone to the Kubert School, and there was Carla Speed McNeil about Finder. I never got her book, or she seemed fascinating because I guess she wrote about relatives in Finder. You know, she showed about her inspiration. There was an artist there that had drawn for Marvel, and there was going to be even more people there. But they didn't have enough chairs for the creators, so two of them walked off. And they were sort of big creators, so I was disappointed because I can't imagine some of the stories they would have told. One was like an inspirational panel, like, you know, creating in today's world kind of panel. The Strange Stories was my favorite. Howard Chaykins was really good. I wanted to ask questions, but I was too intimidated because I was scared shitless to mention Star Wars. But I'm actually fascinated to hear about, you know, him on Star Wars just from a historical perspective. The Batman panel was more like, you know, creators that inspired that panel that I talked about. There was one other panel. I can't remember, but Walter Simonson was on it. I don't remember. Oh, it was a Jack Kirby panel. So they were telling stories about Jack. And he was talking about a Journey into Mystery Thor book that really inspired him. And when he was in college, and so he wrote a letter to Marvel, you know, just, you know, a letters column saying, I'm in a small town. I can't find your comics anywhere, but I read this issue and I need to know what happens. So like editorial, which it said it was from Stan, but it turns out to be it was one of Stan's assistants that sent him that particular comic, you know, to his address. I thought that story was pretty amazing. So there's a lot of, you know, little tidbits and little stories that were amazing. Those of you that listen to this show know how angry Bad Idea makes me, because as a consumer, I just want to buy their comics. Like, and they make it so hard to get their comics. So like I stuck around for the first two rounds and didn't jump on the Kickstarter bandwagon. But it sounds like they're going to be solicited in some previews magazine. I don't know which one in 2025, which should be interesting. But what I did want to talk about was their line was intimidating, you know, because they had a Bad Planet, I think, or Planet Death comic book that was, they were giving away freebie, like ash cans. They're not ash cans. They're like comic books, but without words. It was just an art book of the art. And they were giving away mints with a Bad Idea logo on them. And the mints were really good. They were like butter mints. And you can go by their panel at any time and get those. And but they had these times that were exclusive to Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, where the line was extraordinarily long. And they had like covers of Planet Death that were one of ones. So they had made like 100 copies. I would say about 100 copies of, well, it's probably 300 copies because it was every day of the con that they did this. So the first 100 people, it might have been less than 100, but maybe it was 50. The first 50 people or 100 people would get a one of one exclusive cover. See, that's the shenanigans that I was like, I don't even want to wait in line for that. But on the last day, I walked by because I was going to the Bad Bug. They're one of the Kickstarters. I do support a lot of their publishing, to pick up another comic book because I had read one on Saturday night and I liked it a lot. So I went to go get another issue, and it was Flickering Lights. Which was one of the most unusual stories, but you'll have to listen to Geek Brunch to hear that. But this Bad Bug line was like only four people deep. And I saw that they still had like lunch boxes and dog tags. And I wanted to see that what was, you know, up with this. And the Robert Venditti was there and he was signing comics. So I got in line, I got another mint, and they said, you can pick a lunchbox, a hat, or a dog tag, one of those three items, and you can get a Planet Death comic book with the words in it. So I already had the one that was just art, and I got an actual comic book of Planet Death, and all this shit was free. So they gave a lot of, I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars of promotional material at this con away. None of it was for sale. And then I had Venditti sign the comic book. I should have had him sign the hat. I chose the hat because I use hats like nobody's business. And it's always good to have another hat. And sometimes I sweat in the hat and I don't want to wash it and I just throw them away. So I got the hat. But I just want to say that it was a really pleasant experience. I got Venditti to sign it and Dinesh to sign it. And I got my hat signed by two of the workers that were giving the hat away. I was like, what the fuck? You know, like I just will get it signed. It's like not like I'm going to sell it. I'm going to wear it until it falls apart or I demolish it. But that was a good experience. Meeting Alan, New Mutant again was great. Hanging out with Bill almost at least 20 hours of the day, it seemed like. And going to the game with him, we went to a Baltimore Orioles game versus the Giants with two friends of us, friends of me and Barb's that used to live in Colorado Springs, Sue and Lanka. Sue used to work with Barb, and they got us tickets. We paid for the tickets, but she had got these awesome tickets in the club level, and we all went to the game and enjoyed that on Thursday night. We saw a five-alarm fire across the street near the Marriott. We were in the Hilton. I've never seen a five-alarm fire. I mean, the smoke plumes were just incredible, and to see all the fire trucks and the strategy of them putting the fire out, it was very interesting to see because I never saw something live like that, even though my dad was a fireman. You know, that was his occupation. So that was good. Spent a lot of time looking at booths and comics. I bought about, I don't know, $40 comics. I bought some war comics from one booth on Sunday. I didn't buy anything on Saturday. I bought two comics from Bad Bug. I got the Planet Death stuff from Bad Idea. I got a hardcover from Bad Bug too called Suicide 5. Trying to think. I got a Zenoscope book because if you signed up, you got a comic book, and it turns out I didn't own it, so that was even more of a plus. Creator-wise, like I went by each creator. I talked to Drew Moss. I talked to Peepoy. I did get my Peepoy sketch from Heroes Con that he owed me. It was a golden. I wanted a Golden Age Lois Lane, and it looks amazing. So I was real pleased with that. I still have one more commission from him on his Kickstarter, and then I'm probably going to be not doing commissions anymore. I might buy art. Not original art. It's too expensive. But I might buy some art if people do pre-commissions. Not the one where you pick something, but they already have like sketched out stuff and you can go through their portfolio and buy it. But I didn't really talk to creators because there was a slew of them. It was the first time I've ever seen Splat, Stephen Platt there, who was a fan favorite of mine in the 90s. And I don't know what happened to him. I would have loved to ask him questions, but I don't know if it'd be awkward. I did buy Sight Unseen, some of his DC covers, and was disappointed with them. Like, his style doesn't even look anything like his Moon Knights back in the day or his work at Image. So definitely his style changed. He is was very influential, but it would have been really cool to see him like in some kind of panel. There was Malin, who was an Extreme Studio. I didn't get to talk to him or buy any of his books, but I would have liked to. That was one. He seemed busy to have his like head down and always doing commissions. That's for sure. Splat too. But you know, like for most creators, I don't have an entryway to say, because it's just awkward. Like, I don't have anything to buy at their table, because most of it is like to get something signed or do something. And I'm not a signature guy. Like, I've never been one to say, I'm going to go dig out 5 comics and get them signed. And I've never cared about that. It's like I care about the end product, but not the whole process. Like, if it was Jack Kirby, then I might go nuts, but I would, like, pass out because I wouldn't know what to say. But I tend to always go talk to the creators that I already know, you know, that I'm comfortable with through the podcast or what have you. But it's so weird, you know. I don't go, like, Philip Kennedy Johnson was there. Does Superman, and you know, I could talk to him and say, I really like your work, you know, it reminded me of Warlord of Mars, and I like what you did on Superman, but I don't really have anything to go by. And one of the things, at least at Baltimore, that I realized is they have a yearbook, and I didn't buy one, but or pay attention in the past about this yearbook, but it would be fun to take that yearbook and have all the creators that I could possibly get sign that yearbook. I think it would be a good, interesting conversation, at least an entry conversation point for creators, even though, you know, I'm not like, and then again, like, you, if you follow me, I don't listen to podcasts about creators. Like, it's very seldom, unless it's like Jim Shooter or something. I don't listen to a lot of interviews. I just don't want to. You know, they're out there on podcasts and YouTube, and I just don't go to them. I've listened to some, like a Tim V. Hill, like some ones that I'm really interested to see, like, or I know nothing about the creator, but it's very few and far between. So that takes me out of that, like, realm of, you know. So it's weird. I spend more time at the publishers or the back issue vendors and stuff than I do at the creator tables. Although I spend a lot of time walking in and out of them, seeing if they have something that catches my eye. But then again, when you buy everything, you can't go to their table and say, I want that collected edition because I have all the fucking issues. So, yeah, it's strange, but there were so many creators. And I brought back my Baltimore Comic Con little pamphlet with all the panels. It was luckily in my database, so I just said, there, I have it. And every time they have it, I'm going to put them in, you know, the Heroes Con and the Baltimore Comic Con. Even though I have it on my phone too digitally, I think it's great to have a physical copy as long as they do them. I think it's amazing. So going forward, I mean, I am excited to maybe do some of that. I did want to get a Joe Staton a print and have him sign it, but I forgot. I did go by his panel once on Friday, and I saw the ones that I wanted. He had a Legion one and a Justice Society, and I was thinking of getting both of them. And he had some Dick Tracy stuff. He actually did some Dick Tracy, and I would have liked to get that, too. So many different creators. I can't even name them all. did see some Star Joe's friends. trying to think of everybody that I saw, but it was mostly Bill, Daryl, Alan, Keith's wife, Hassan. Saw Hassan. You know, we did Gotham by Geeks together and been friends for a while. Trying to think of some other people that I saw. Bill Zanowich, we saw him and talked to him. Briefly saw Peter Rios, Shane Kelly, and Pants. They were there, I think, one day, and I was going to the down the escalator to go into, because the con was in the basement. I was going down that way, and they were going up maybe to get their passes or something. But I did run into the Comic Geek Speak people for a brief moment. They recognized us because we've seen him. We've seen Peter and Pants and Shane. I think we've seen at multiple Baltimore Comic Cons in the past. He said he hasn't gone in a while, but I remember seeing him at the cons because I see him in my picture memories. Didn't take a lot of pictures, but for those that are friends with me on Facebook, I don't let a lot of people into my world on Facebook, but I will post all of the pictures that I did take. When I used to go to a con, man, I would have at least 150 photos to post, and now it's like 15, maybe. I took a picture of the panels and my friends, and that's pretty much about it. I didn't even do like a layout shot of the con. It would have been nice to do. Saturday was definitely the busiest, but I think you could say that for almost every con, is that Friday's the least amount of people, and Sunday's kind of like family oriented, and as it winds down, it gets really empty. But it's a good time to shop because people don't want to carry back books with them and stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff. So I'm going to go over some of the purchases. I bought a lot of Fighting Forces, and with the exception of Jack Kirby's Losers, I didn't have a lot of Losers. So I picked up the ones, you know, I have the Jack Kirby ones, but I've always been fascinated in this team. So I got issue 160, which has them looking at some Nazis and says, "We did it, Losers. We surprised him." And it's got a guy with like a Gatling gun and a bunch of Nazis with Lugers and those, you know, the machine guns. And it looks like they're coming in from a hole on the, and they're going to surprise them. 161 has Captain Storm coming down. It says, "Down here, Losers, the shelling can't touch us down here." And there's Nazis waiting for him. This is a great cover. It's Our Fighting Forces 162, and Sarge is telling the rest of the Losers, "Our replacements, they're just kids," and it has three kids there. That one would be fun to read, just to see what they, you know, what's happening. We got 164, the new Losers. It has "We Made It, Returning the Sacred Mirror to the Town." Yeah, not a German in sight, but Sarge is holding the mirror backwards, and you can see the Germans are on the roof. A lot of surprise covers, like we're hiding from the Germans, or the Germans are hiding, ready to attack us. We got a Losers where they're in a boat, and this is not a boat, what do you call it? One of those air inflatable rafts. "You winged him, but bringing him down right on us." And it's like a German fighter pilot is getting ready to crash into their little boat. 166. A bunch of people are diving. And one of the guys that's diving. This doesn't even look like the losers, but he says, why doesn't she give the order to open our chutes before it's too late? I guess waiting for this female to say, you can open your chute now. We got our fighting force is 167, and it's got like a falcon going to drop a grenade. They have a Nazi officer, and it says, what he mean we're going to get be blasted? There's no other crowd around. Well, a bird's going to drop a grenade on the losers. We have our fighting force is 168. This is a woman being hanged. And the German is saying, for the last time, I warn you, talk or the girl dies now. And the losers, I guess, are they're in line and they have to talk. We have 170. One must execute this spy. Who will it be? And there's a female on the front cover. It's Joe Kubert. A lot of these are Joe Kubert covers. We got, I say we got a lot. I bought a 171. And again, the losers are Captain Storm, Johnny Cloud, Gunner, and Sarge. And it looks like there's a female around sometimes. And sometimes the dog, Gunner and Sarge's dog. So 171, they are, I can't tell what they're on. But whatever they're on this vertical thing. It looks like, they're on a windmill, the part of the windmill. And a fighter pilot's shooting at him. Our fighting force is 172, has shirtless losers in a camp. There's Nazis there and some female. And it's called the two-headed spy. That little double-crosser, and she said she was one of us. So the female betrayed them. 173 has the losers carrying a coffin away from Germans on skis. And it says, keep going, we'll be out of their range. An appointment with a direct hit, bait for the tin fish. This cover, it says, wanted, the losers dead or alive by German headquarters. And this is 175. And this one I bought off the spinner rack. And I have bought it again because I traded it away. I told you during this time we traded comics in order to read more comics. And I unfortunately traded this away, but repurchased it. And when I had it, I don't remember the story now, but I read it at least five times before I traded it away. So I was very fond of this one. So what else we got? Our fighting force is 176. The loser is a teenager plus courage of a coward. Captain Storm said, Lenny warned us the Nazis were hiding in these haystacks. Where is that kid? And it looks like there's a Nazi holding the kid's mouth. This is our fighting force is 178. Ready, aim, fire. They're in a firing squad. And I wonder who the female is, because they never advertise her. But there's a female, Sergeant Gunner, and Storm. Or, Johnny Cloud. And Captain Storm is saying, ready, aim. And he says, our leader's executing us. Never thought I'd live to see that. It's the last thing we'll ever see. This one, they're in a plane, and there's a female using one of the guns on the side, and she's blasting stuff, and the losers are inside, wounded. Our fighting force is 181. They're on, what do they call those things? A lift? It looks like in a mountain lift, like they use them in ski resort, a tram, kind of like a tram. to Up a Mountain. This one says, beginning explosive new series, Super Spy, the origin of the codename Falcon. That must be the backup story. And it says, hug the other side of the car before they wipe us out. They're trying to balance it. Oh no, the cable's fraying. As the Nazis are shooting at the losers as they're on this cable car off the side of a mountain. Star Spangled War Story. So now we're switching to The Unknown Soldier. This has the Unknown Soldier putting on a mask, and one of the Germans is saying, Major, what are you doing out here? Well, it looks like he might have killed or knocked out one of the Nazis and is trying to take his place. And it shows his face as a skull. Our Star Spangled War Stories 192. It just has the Unknown Soldier in his mummy face. He's chained to a wall, and the Nazis found him. Star Spangled War Stories 193. Looks like the Unknown Soldier is jumping on to catch a thing on the side of a building, and the Nazis are ready to shoot him. Our Star Spangled War Stories, why did I put R? Because I'm used to saying R, Fighting Forces. Star Spangled War Stories, number 194. There's a firing squad, and they're gonna kill this beautiful woman. On the count of three, kill the traitor. That one I'm pretty sure I've read before. So either I traded it away, or I read it, and I didn't inventory it properly. Unknown Soldier, Star Spangled War Stories, 192. He's carrying a beautiful woman away from a plane crash of a Nazi plane. And there's two German soldiers waiting by palm trees ready to shoot him. I got Unknown Soldier, 199. Our Star Spangled War Stories, again, he's putting on the mask of a dead soldier. So that's like a repeat of a previous, just a different cover. We have Enemy Ace in 20. God, I can't see anymore. It's so frustrating. It looks like the number's cut off. 200. This is issue 200 of Star Spangled War Stories. There's an extra of Enemy Ace Flies Again. And in this one, it's an interesting shot because you're looking down on a train and you can't even see the two Nazis shooting at the Unknown Soldier, but he's fighting with a guy on the top of the train and knocks him off the train, and he's a Nazi. So, interesting angle by Kubert. This one you have a fight of a Nazi guy, and in the background you see a submarine and three rafts of Nazi soldiers coming. And it says, a deadly plague will strike New York if the faceless warrior loses the back alley war. That's 201. 202 is a Nazi hitting the Unknown Soldier with the back end of a gun and saying, you masquerade as finished, American spy, and so are you. So that wraps up all the purchases. So there's quite a bit of war comics I purchased, and what I was telling Bill is I tend to buy things at the spur of the moment. Like, what am I interested in at the current moment? I don't stay focused on what I need, but what I really am hungry for at the moment. It's so bizarre. I wish sometimes I would focus on what's needed. I did have a chance to buy Tomb of Dracula number 10 and failed, and those things were going like hotcakes. I talked to one vendor there, and he said he didn't bring them because the books are undervalued right now. The market is dropping, and he says that book is worth a lot usually. And I said, yeah, that's why I want to buy it, because I knew the prices were dropping. So I had a chance to get a VG one. I had it in my hand, and I wanted to do more shopping, and by the time I got back, it was gone. That happened three times when I wanted to bruise prices and compare. And by the time I think I left the con, I saw five copies, and every time I went back to buy it, they were all gone. So there weren't a lot of copies of that. There are plenty of Hulk 181s and Punisher 129 or Amazing Spider-Man 129 and other hot books, but those blades were tough to come by. And I was about to spend $2,000 or $1,500 on a book, so that would have been a big purchase. So I hope you enjoyed the Baltimore Comic Con wrap-up. There's more details on the Geek Brunch site. And I'll get to some listener questions now. So let's see. That is under more, and then bookmarks. And I think these are all from Dallow Spicer. So let's jump to those. I already talked about that one, so I can untag that one. So he says, question for Mike's Weekly Reads. What's your estimate unread volume? What's your estimated unread volume? I think what he means, unread comics. How many extras per month would you have to read to start reducing the unread backlog? So I'm encroaching on 100,000. I think he's poking at me. I to say, you know, you have 100,000 comics. Of those 100,000 comics, how much are unread? To be honest, I would say of 100,000 comics, and I'm 200 short of 100,000 now. I still need to read 40,000. I've read 60,000. I think that's a good estimate. So that's a lot of comics to read, and it's hard to catch up on those comics because the fire hose is always open, and I'm a mood reader, so I'm not always in the mood for one genre or creative team, and then I go down another path, and that causes me to buy more comics, and yeah, very, very unusual. So I will never read my entire, unless I have if I live to 100, and I stop buying comics, let's say I retire and I have 40 years of reading comics, it's possible that I could finish those 40,000 comics. But the way I read, probably not. So yeah, I hope that answers your question. I think you're poking me because you're like, maybe you should slow down and read your comics. I don't know if that'll ever happen. You got another question for Mike Sam. Rank the order, your favorite part of the process. Receiving comics in the mail, purchasing books in a store, cataloging, storing new comics to your collection, picking new books to purchase, reading comic books, talking about comic books. Well, that's tough because I enjoy all of those. Except I know what's last, cataloging and storing new comic books. So in order to store, there's merging and cataloging. I like putting them into my database. That's fun, but I don't like storing them, especially because there's usually cost associated with storing, whether it be space or actually a storage unit. So that's last. A lot of these are sort of related. I would say picking new comic books to purchase. That's fun because that could be my number one, because I love looking through previews. Like, that's the first thing I do when I get previews. I like to see what's new, what's coming out, what I want to purchase. That's probably my favorite thing. And it has been since I started buying previews and Capital Cities, whatever the hell that was, and reading Wizard magazine, that or Comic Scene. That was always like, what do I get? You know, that's probably my number one. My second would be reading comics. My third would be talking about comics, because I love talking about comics. There's instances where I have felt a certain way about a comic book, and then I talk about it, and I love it even more. Like, just hearing somebody else's thoughts helps you flesh out a better understanding of something you might have felt ho-hum about. And then you, like, see it through another person's eyes, and you're like, holy crap. So that would be my third. Purchasing books in a store, that's probably fourth. My fifth would be receiving comics in the mail. That's like Kickstarters and my DCBS order. And then last is cataloging and storing new comics. Although cataloging is pretty high, because I like doing that part. Even if there's a bar scanner going bloop, 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 bloop. If they're not, then I just go in, find the title, and then I usually organize them, and then I manually put them into the database. So if I could divide those up, cataloging would be higher. It would probably be four or five. Storing, that's dead last. So thank you for that question. Another question he has, how will you celebrate hitting 100,000 comic books? I have nothing planned. I will post it that I hit 100,000 comic books. And some of those are dupes. I'm estimating about 200 to 400 comic books are duplicates. So it's not a lot. I don't buy dupes of anything, and I don't count variants as a dupe. So I don't know if that's a question I could ask Bob Breetal, if the Guinness Book of World Records, when they count dupes, do they count a variant cover as a dupe? Or do they count it as a separate purchase? I don't know, because it is a separate, like, purchase code. It didn't exist in the past. You know, variant covers is something very 90s going forward. There were some variants in the 80s, but they're few and far between. When do you expect to hit it? Or have you hit it already? Both. I've hit it already. I gained a lot of leeway because I started inventorying the infamous closet of uninventoried comic books. And if I went and finished inventorying them, I've been doing a short box the last couple of weekends, but I'll probably take this weekend off and read a lot. But I'm 200 books away. I will probably hit it next week. After I scan in my DCBS order, my comic shop's purchase at this, and then I still have these losers and about 15 Kickstarters to enter in. I think I'm already there. If I have the uninventoried stuff, I'm way past it. I'm probably at, that's got to be another 4,000 comic books. So I'm already there, to answer your question. The other last question you had, have you got a Rob Liefeld sketch? No, I haven't. Those would be extremely expensive to get. And original art, extremely expensive. If you were to get one, what character would you have? He knows I like Rob Liefeld. I'm a big fan. What characters would you have sketched? I've seen him do the DC stuff, and I'm not crazy about him doing DC. But if I had him do a DC characters, I would have him do Hawk and Dove, which characters he started off with at DC Comics. That was sort of his first professional. He had done some stuff for other publish, but it was one of his first jobs for the big two. On the Marvel side, I would probably have him do Cable. I'm not the biggest Deadpool fan. That's probably what a thousand, you know, most majority of people would say. But Cable, I would definitely have him. If I had to have him do a Marvel team, I would choose the Defenders because I know he's a huge fan of the Defenders and Champions because of his discussions on his podcast. And either one of those teams, the Defenders, preferably the Defenders because they're higher than the Champions. But if he did the Champions, I would also be stoic with that. In terms of teams, the Defenders, and that would be like Nighthawk, Hulk, Doctor Strange, Hellcat, you know, that kind of era. Oh, Valkyrie for sure. So, yeah, I would love that. Son of Satan. The champions, not the new champions, it'd be the classic champions, which Hercules, Ghost Rider, Black Widow, Angel, and Iceman. That would be the characters I'd want him to portray. So in terms of teams, I hope that answers your questions. Single characters would be, I'm going to include Hawk and Dove as a single character for DC. And it might be fun to see him do a Deathstroke on the DC side. And Cable. He likes drawing characters with weapons, so Deathstroke would be a good choice to choose. You know, I know he doesn't like war comics and horror, but Sergeant Rock would be a fun one to choose, I think, where he's got a weapon, you know, he's blasting away, you know, with the bullets around his shoulders and I think that could be amazing. But I want to thank you, Dallo, for always keeping topics available and coming up with some great questions. So that will wrap up that part. And then I just have to total some comic books and I'll be right back. All right, I am back. And we're going to talk about books read from August 5th through August 11th of 2024. We're going to start with the things I watched. Everything was a 4 out of 5. This is The Order. Abigail, I watched that horror movie. It was about a little girl vampire that's kidnapped. But it has a twist. Enjoyed that one. I also watched a lot of Olympics on Peacock and NBC related channels. And the last thing I watched was Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 1 and 2. I'm sure Part 3 is coming to streaming too on Max. That was really good. I really liked it. I thought they dealt with it totally different. They do have those Amazo robots that are in Task Force 7, the absolute power. So that's pretty cool. They changed a lot of like the main Crisis story, but they do manage to work in a lot of key parts and characters. So it's very worthwhile. I like it, and Crisis is well thought of for me. Comic books, there were a total of 27 comic books. We got 1 Zenoscope, 5 Valiant, 1 Udon, 3 Marvel, 4 Image, 1 Eros, 7 DC, 2 Dark Horse, 1 Boom, and 2 Antarctic. I'm going to start with the 3 out of 5s. Again, so 3 out of 5 means I liked it. A 4 out of 5 means I really liked it. And a 5 out of 5 is I loved it. I never give 2s usually, but a 2 out of 5 is I didn't like it. And a number 1 is I hated it. I don't have too many of that. 3 out of 5s, I gave Street Fighter, Masters Game Gals. That wasn't crazy about that one. But I was at least entertained and saw some interesting art. The Savage Wolverine number 1. This is a brand new Wolverine. And it's by Greg Capullo and Jonathan Hickman. Wolverine fights AIM-driven creature after Krakoa is dissolved. Is that Savage Wolverine? Because I think that's something else. I remember the Savage Wolverine is being out of continuity, and this sounds like it's in continuity. So maybe I'm off on that description. And I don't remember Krakoa even being in the book. So 4 out of 5 or Blood Squad 7 number 2. It establishes the team in the past with an appearance of Savage Dragon, and then catches up with events from the previous issue. So far, it's been interesting. It's Joe Casey written, and it's a superhero book that takes place in early Image years, which is very interesting to me. And the fact that this one had Savage Dragon, was really good. Outsiders number 4 through 10. This is the current incarnation of the Outsiders, which is more like trying to th Planetary. It even features a planetary character called Drummer, but it features Batwoman, Unusual, and also Luke, the Batman, the Bat, I guess he was Batwing. And then Batman recently, when Bruce wasn't around. So that's the introduction of the new Century Baby, Jenny Chaos, which is the like Jenny Sparks. This is the first Outsiders volume issue I really liked and really enjoyed. Very unusual issue as the team visits Nocturna. If you read Old Detective, Nocturna kind of was like a stepmom to Jason Todd, but she's in this book in her vampire demon bar. I am sure I would appreciate this book more if I had read Planetary. Next issue shows how Snow, Drummer, and Chiquita Wagner, so it's getting closer to the Planetary team. The drummer in this series is really Chiquita Wagner. Have a really good issue with Jenny Hex, so the great great granddaughter of Jonah Hex was in an issue, and that was really good. Ain't No Grave. This issue is from Image Comics, and it's like a supernatural western. I really really like it, especially artistically. It is so beautiful. The mother is a fighter, other monsters in a Western magic setting, but it is such a interesting story to follow, and the art is I would say breathtaking for me. Like it really is something to just absorb and look at. Bloodshot Unleashed Unloaded 1 through 3. Bloodshot is dealing with another nanite creatures and Project Reborn, and is dealing with Blood Squirt. So Blood Squirt is back as his daughter tries to meet up with him and Magic the mother. A lot better than I thought. I'm really get back into the Valiant universe and excited about it. Horror and Fantasy Illustrated Plum Island. This is just a scientist has to kill a forest nymph but ends up freeing her. I was very entertained with that from Zenoscope from Antarctic Press. Fantasy Comics 5 and 6. The main character rescues a young girl in a sewer and enters a contest to win money and actually gets it. She meets up with friends and then joins the caravan to take the kids back to another city, and they are attacked by trolls in a war. She feeds a circus creature, and he joins them in a fight. Iron Man 325. This is the first volume, obviously, because of the high number. Tony versus Young Tony. The Avengers attack, and Kang shows up with his army and Mantis and kids. So this is that time slide story and crossing, wrapping up. Avengers 395 finished crossing time slide and enjoyed it very much. Kang was responsible for Hank's breakdowns and could not use him, so he chose Tony, and they made Tony the bad guy. But he was responsible for Hank Pym's breakdowns. Think about it. Older Tony makes an ultimate sacrifice to stop Kang. Young Tony barely hanging on, and Luna returns to her family. From Image Comics Impact Winter, a young girl protects her sister and joins a team in a world that is always in darkness, and winter is always there, and vampires are everywhere. It was really good. It's based on an Audible series, so something that's like something to listen to. But the comic book was solid, and there is another comic book to read, but another one shot. It's very weird how you read about this. The Displaced is a Boom Studio book. A woman is separated from her family, and a son separated from his dying father, and a man tries to block off a town as it falls into a sinkhole and is forgotten that it even exists. So it's one of those sinkhole things. There's been some TV shows about this. I don't know if people forgot about it, but La Brea, I think, was a show in that vein. And there's been other comic books that have dealt with like missing cities and stuff like that. Punk Mambo, the Punk Witch Project. Punk Mambo gets to London to stop a punk rocker from releasing uncontrollable demons and has to team up with a warlock. We have Livewire and the Secret Weapons. Livewire tries to isolate herself from the internet so Capshaw can't track her. She meets up with her Psyot friends but are later attacked. Livewire, the doctor she was seeing was Dr. Silk. We have Lester of the Lester Gods from Dark Horse Comics. This is a story by Eric Powell and another writer, and has art by a like-minded artist of Eric Powell, probably a friend of his, but it's really good. It seems like a goon story, but in a different world. Like, just the sense of humor and pacing and art, it seems like it's that world. Even though the art style is very dramatically different, it feels like something that Eric Powell will do. Establishes the origin of Lester and his adversaries, but in the style of the goon. That's what I wrote. The 5 out of 5s, which I loved. Savage Dragon 271 from Image Comics. Maxine, in her naked fun run, gets attacked by Mickey. Their daughter rescues the tiger Walter, and Malcolm fights the supremacist villain Dusty Coach. Dusty Cooch, that hates anything that's non-white. Angel finds out that Frank is in jail, is Mr. Gloom. Frank is trying to get help in a dimension he is in. So you remember that Mr. Gloom switched places with Frank, and Frank is out in our world, and he's in jail right now. Beyond the Pale, number one. So I didn't order follow-on issues just because I forgot. But this was a 5 out of 5, and the trade is solicited in the new preview, so I will be ordering it. The reporter goes to Vietnam to investigate missing black soldiers. It's amazing. It's paced like a movie. I'm very intrigued. From Dark Horse Comics, I loved it. Highly recommend it if you are into Vietnam stories. So I'm going to wrap up that, and I want to thank you for listening to Mike M's Weekly Reads, the Baltimore Comic Con wrap-up and discussion, questions, and some of the books. Against the highlights of my reading pile that week were Beyond the Pale, a Vietnam story from Dark Horse Comics, and Savage Dragon from Image Comics 271. So I want to thank you for listening. Again, you can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch on X and Blue Sky. You can send me email at MikeMyersBrunch@gmail.com. And you can talk to me both places about sending questions, because I'm all caught up now. I need more questions to keep the show moving. And we will talk to you soon. And you can find us at the DCNoisePodcast.com website. And find us on Facebook at DC Noise Podcast and Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button, follow all the episode threads there. And you should know that we moved from the Geek Brunch site and we're consolidating on the DC Noise site all of the Geek Brunch family podcasts. So we'll talk to you soon and take care. And thanks for listening and read more comics. Bye.